The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Carrie Lawson from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. We're going to start with an article from Work and Money. This one is entitled, Finally, a Healthcare Company by Women for Women. Tia, co-founder and CEO Carolyn Witt, is revolutionizing women's health by giving patients access to all of their doctors in one place. Whether you're looking for help with your physical, reproductive, or mental health, you're probably used to scheduling time with medical professionals at different practices all on your own. But San Francisco-based healthcare company, TIA, simplifies things by offering access to medical practitioners in a variety of categories: primary care, mental health, gynecology, and wellness, through one service. Each member gets access to a care team, medical providers, a clinical support team, and a care coordinator. The company originally started as a messaging platform. We had a team of medical advisors, doctors like OBGYNs, that were feeding us the doctor speak. Our job was to translate it, TIA, co-founder and CEO Carolyn Witt, tells Oprah Daily. You didn't have to pay a PhD or go to medical school to understand it. We sat down with Witt to learn more about what it was like taking the company from a messaging hub to a series of in-person clinics, plus virtual care offerings in different cities across the country. Where the idea came from. I started TIA from my dining room table in San Francisco in 2017 with a big vision to reimagine healthcare with women at the center. It was a byproduct of my own experience as a patient, struggling to navigate healthcare and realizing how fragmented it is, frustrated by a healthcare system that fractures women's health by body part and reproductive life event. You have all these different doctors. None of it connects. I asked myself, what would healthcare look like, work like, and feel like if it actually was designed for women and treated them as whole people versus parts? Which is really the basis of TIA's comprehensive care model that we have today. It's been quite a journey as a first-time founder and entrepreneur. The initial goal. Our goal, ultimately, is quite simple and really hard: to make women healthier and enable every woman to make informed choices for her own body and life. That's always been a core guiding principle for me. I see us in the business of helping women make decisions for themselves so they can be healthier as defined by themselves. The focus on whole people, integrated care, access, and inclusivity, all of these are in service of that broader goal of helping women get and stay truly well. First steps. I didn't immediately start by building clinics and delivering healthcare services. The first thing I actually built was an app called TIA. Think of it as a texting service that was the answer to WebMD or Google for your health. I'd spent years working on Google search, and I was like, women aren't getting good health information, so they can't make good health decisions. Can we be the answer to Google or WebMD? It really, really took off. We had over 200,000 one-on-one conversations with women about their health, which was really wild. We learned a ton and effectively found that those women wanted TIA to be their doctor. That's what led us to say, okay, we shouldn't just give women health information, let's give them health care and care that treats them as a whole people. I truly just had an idea and got to work, quit my job at Google and just started, which is kind of crazy in retrospect. I didn't know what I didn't know and just started making. I think one thing that's guided me and TIA from the beginning is that I didn't see it as a market opportunity. I said, healthcare is terrible for women. I want it to be better. Let me build a product that makes it better for me and other women. Oh, and it turns out there's a real business here too. We're constantly driven by what real women want in the world, which is very different than traditional healthcare. The hardest moment. convincing the world to care, in particular, investors. We've raised a lot of money for this company, and the overarching women's health care category has grown immensely since I started the company. When I first tried to raise venture capital dollars, people used to say to me, "Why are you building a healthcare company for women? You're cutting out half the population." So there's a lot of education and a huge amount of rejection you have to overcome to have the conviction to keep building. The moment you thought this just might work. I'll give you two moments. There was one for the app and then one when we switched or pivoted to the clinic. My co-founder, Felicity Yost, and I used to be Tia. We would literally sit and message with real women around the country and answer their questions, using information from a team of medical advisors. Eventually, we hired other people who we called wing women. They were health educators who would chime in and answer these questions. We did this from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. There was a period where we would answer 3,000 chats a day. The second moment was when we opened our first clinic in New York City in 2019. Everyone thought we were crazy. It was so hard to raise money for this. Everyone was like, "That's never going to work. Brick and mortar clinics, doctors are expensive. That's hard. Like, healthcare's fine. Women don't need this." And it exploded. And again, we had too many patients, to the point where we had to institute a wait list and have people join it to eventually be able to become a member of TIA and get an appointment. Of course we want every woman to have TIA. It's just that we have too much demand and we don't know what to do. The result? We serve tens of thousands of women across the country from ages 18 to 80. We delivered 100,000 healthcare services to women in 2022. By the end of this year, we'll have 9 physical clinics open across LA, New York City, San Francisco, and Phoenix. In books, this is 5 immersive audiobooks that take storytelling to new heights. The newest audiobooks feature full cast productions, celebrity narrators, and sound effects that pull you into the story like never before. These 5 are so immersive they'll make you look forward to the TSA line. Summer is flying by, and there are still so many beaches to explore, waves to surf, and grills to fire up. It can be hard to do it all with a book in hand. Luckily, you don't have to choose between soaking up the summer and savoring a great story. These audiobooks are here to co-pilot your upcoming road trip, keep you company on a long flight, and even transform your last-minute popsicle run into a novel experience. Daisy Jones and the 6 by Taylor Jenkins Reid. That's R-E-I-D. If you haven't already devoured the Amazon Prime limited series based on Reid's novel, the award-winning audio production is a perfect vehicle for this rock and roll soap opera. Structured as an oral history with interview clips, it's the story of a 1970s rock band built around an explosive love-hate relationship between 2 gifted, gorgeous, and sometimes totally gaga singer-songwriters, Daisy Jones, read by Jennifer Beals, and Billy Dunne, D-U-N-N-E, read by Pablo Schreiber. An all-star cast fills out the band and their entourage. Particularly lovable are Judy Greer as keyboardist and proto-feminist Karen and Benjamin Bratt as Billy's younger brother Graham, another couple with complications galore. Julia Whelan, W-H-E-L-A-N, reads the author character, weaving together the interview snippets with chronology and scene setting, then becoming the source of a wonderfully unexpected twist. The next one is Heartburn by Nora Ephron. Depending on your age, you either can't believe it's been 40 years since Heartburn came out or have no idea what we're talking about. Heartburn is one of the funniest, sharpest novels of our era, a Roman of Clef penned by comic genius Nora Ephron, Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail, etc. After she was cheated on while pregnant by her journalist husband. Though this book was written in a time when phones were attached to the wall and stewardesses walked down the aisle to collect fares on the Washington NYC air shuttle, Meryl Streep's hilarious and endearing reading makes it clear that Ephron will never, ever be dated. In fact, she predicted emojis in the first few pages. I am not the sort of person who puts little faces on things, but there are times when nothing else will do. Since Streep also played this character in the film of Heartburn, it's almost as if she is Rachel Samstedt, and the recipes are to die for. Next is Hang the Moon by Jeanette Walls. So many of us feel we know Jeanette Walls from reading or watching the film of her landmark memoir, The Glass Castle. And this makes hearing her read her third historical novel in her warm, expressive southern twang a special pleasure. And we're aware Walls knows all about flawed daddies in Star Power, and here she's created a fictional one for the ages. Sally Kincaid's father is called the Duke, but he might as well be king of their post-World War I Virginia county. He collects rents, controls politics, and shuffles wives in and out like Henry VIII. Our narrator, Sally, is the daughter of his second wife, sent to live with a poor relation because of an incident where her stepmother's son, with her stepmother's son. When wife number three also bites the dust, 17-year-old Sally is brought back to town to raise her younger half-brother. Claiborne County will never be the same. Big Sis by Jen Beagin, B-E-A-G-I-N. If you have a weakness for gossip, this clever and sneakily insightful book is all about the guilty pleasure of peering into other people's private lives, which makes audio the perfect way to take it in. You feel like you actually are eavesdropping. Greta, who at 45 is still drifting between address and careers, has washed up in the inbred hipster paradise of Hudson, New York, where she gets a job as a transcriber for the town's popular sex therapist, a man called Ohm. O.M. Just as she is, she will be dumbstruck by the recordings of Ohm's sessions with his patient, F.E.W., whom Greta nicknames Big Swiss based on her accent. Carlotta Brentan and Chili Big Swiss and Stephen Graybill as Smarmy Ohm bring the often heart-stopping therapy sessions to life, while Rebecca Lohman, who plays Greta, sputters in the background. Whoa! Yikes! Is this a joke? After Greta and Big Swiss meet at the dog park, the latter's sexual problems are addressed in a way that's for adult listeners only. And the last one is Life and Other Love Songs by Anissa Gray. This affecting story of a black family comes to life in audio, braiding the evocative voices of three brilliant voice actors to tell a story of love, betrayal, and secrets kept for decades. Deborah and Oz meet as teenagers in Detroit in the early 60s. She's a talented singer and hopes to follow in the steps of the Supremes and her girl group. He's a quiet, hardworking boy, recently arrived in town from Alabama with his mother, brother, and cousin under dark circumstances they have agreed to conceal. This decision has a series of tragic consequences, and the couple's daughter, Trinity, will grow up with no way to understand her mother's despair-fueled drinking or her father's abandonment of the family when she is just 16. Dominic Hoffman perfectly conveys both Oz's quiet decency and his racking guilt, while Karen Murray's musical voice is perfect for Deborah. Nicole Lewis is warm and funny and real as the girl who somehow keeps her head above water through it all. Over in TV and movies, Gail King can't wait for you to get in on this month's new releases. This month, our editor-at-large celebrates an important milestone with recommendations you won't want to skip. August is here already, can you believe it? With the summer still in full swing, I hope you're taking time off and spending it with your family. To me, that never gets old. I went on a trip to Europe with favorite son Will, favorite daughter Kirby, their significant others, and of course, favorite grandson Luca. This season truly is the perfect time to celebrate National Sons and Daughters Day on August 11th. Below, here's a peek at all my favorite releases to look forward to before Labor Day rolls around. Shucked on Broadway. I know. Why would anyone be singing and laughing about corn? A lot of people may ask themselves this before they see Shucked on Broadway, but I personally think part of the fun is not knowing exactly what you're getting yourself into before the curtain goes up. I went to see the comedy musical with favorite son Will, and coincidentally, I ended up matching the marquee. It wasn't planned, I promise. The show is filled with drama, country tunes, hilarious jokes, and huge talent. Special shout out to Alex Newell, who was fantastic. See the show with a great crowd makes it all the better. You clap, laugh, and whoop together. It's all great fun. Grab your tickets, head to the Nederlander Theater in New York City, and tell them I sent you. John Batista's World Music Radio. Ready to take a sonic trip around the world? John Batista is back with a new album, and I got to listen to a preview. World Music Radio has range. It's fresh and fun. I'm a big fan of John and his work, and his musical talent is undeniable. His 5 Grammy Awards are proof of this. But best of all, he's also such a good person. This new album features Kenny G and Lil Wayne, and the songs have elements of country, funk, ballads, and more. Some of my favorite tracks so far, Be Who You Are and Running Away. Take a listen when the album is released on August 18th. Soul, bliss, and soul is spelled S-O-L-E. Ladies, you know that sometimes we must choose between style and comfort, but with Soul Bliss, you don't have to. I wore their Remy, that's R-E-M-Y, royal suede heels to the New York premiere of Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1. And I was able to enjoy the evening in complete comfort thanks to the shoe's cushioned platform. Seriously, you don't need to feel like you're walking on stilts. The brand's specialty is in its design that gives your feet extra support, especially for people with bunions. And if you don't take my word for it, see the shoes worn by Viola Davis, Helen Mirren, Gabrielle Union, and Rebel Wilson. If you're not into heels, Soul Bliss offers sandals and platform sneakers, too. You can shop them all. Here, 50 years of hip-hop. As the old tale goes, hip-hop started at a party in the Bronx, New York, in August of 1973. Fast forward a half century later, and the genre is celebrated worldwide. I can't pass up the opportunity to tell you the story of how I discovered one of my favorite rappers. Favorite son, Will, was 8 years old when I overheard him singing, "Gimme that funk, that sweet, that nasty, that gushy stuff." Immediately I scolded him and asked him to turn the song off. He then had to explain to me, "Mom, that's Jay-Z." Years later, Will and I met up in Paris to see Jay-Z perform alongside Kanye West for their Watch the Throne tour. Needless to say, I've been a huge fan ever since. Cheers to many, many more years of hip-hop. Okay, we're over in intentions. Oprah wants to know when you step forward. Hi, insiders. I'm in one of my favorite places to vacation, Portofino. Been here many times, and it's always such a joy. I remember the first time I saw it, I thought it was a set from a Disney movie. This week, I'm thinking about something that I heard Abraham Verghese say on our 6th podcast for The Covenant of Water. He was telling the story of being a young doctor and having to change the sheets for a patient who had pooped in the bed, and a nurse walked in to change the sheets, and all the other interns and doctors who were in the room stepped back, and he happened to step forward because he knew how to do that, because there's a certain way that you change poopy sheets. I was so moved by that story because I thought it was a great metaphor for life, for people who step forward when other people stepped back, because I was thinking about myself in that room. Would I have stepped forward to change the poopy sheets? Probably not. But witnessing him do it, he said that having his students witness him do it, he thinks left a lasting impression. The story left a lasting impression on me, too. I'm wondering, in your own life, when have you stepped forward while others stepped backwards? Something to think about this week. Let me know your thoughts and go well. Happy summer vacation. This article is in Wellness. How to feel good in your skin, whatever your shape or size. This simple body neutrality practice turns self-criticism into emotional self-care. Readers, it works. The lexicon of how we feel about our bodies is brief and extreme. Body shame is walking past the mirror and talking negatively about yourself. It may sound like, my stomach looks gross, I hate my legs, these stretch marks are ugly. Body positivity is countering those thoughts and with positivity. My stomach is beautiful. I love every inch of my legs. Stretch marks are my tiger stripes, and they are great. So where does body neutrality fit into the equation? It could be described as the midpoint between body shame and toxic positivity, where the pendulum stops swinging. But I prefer to see it on a totally different track, because unlike the two poles, which are body-centered, bodily hate versus bodily love, neutrality takes the body out of the equation. No matter how we feel on any given day about our body, whether our pendulum is swinging toward deep shame or extreme positivity, Practicing body neutrality is to acknowledge the feelings we have, explore why those feelings may have shown up for us, and then reconnect with our self-worth. Here's a breakdown of those three steps. Step 1. Acknowledge your feelings. Tune in to the way you speak about your body and attempt to be a bystander to your thoughts. Wow, I am having a lot of feelings about my legs today. I'm listening to the things I'm saying about myself, and I'm being really hard on myself right now. The things I'm saying I would never say to a friend. The things I'm saying I would never say to my child. These are nasty, hurtful things to think and speak. Giving space to your thoughts can be eye-opening, which is why writing them down can reveal the reality of your relationship with your body in ways you maybe hadn't realized existed. Write down the thoughts you're not supposed to tell anybody. Stare at them, no matter how much you'd like to look away. I used to find this phase challenging because I didn't want to acknowledge that I was having a hard time. I wanted to have an easy time. I wanted to be strong and doing great and love myself, no matter what. But it's so important to tell yourself on the days you can't make it there that it's okay to not be okay. I repeat, it is okay to not be okay. There's no shame in having a hard time. In the context of the world we live in, it's almost inevitable. It's not that this first step makes you feel great, but it can help neutralize what's going on and help you detach a little. Acknowledgement is about pulling yourself out of the situation, standing above yourself, looking down and seeing what's happening. Sometimes it helps me to view myself as different versions of myself. I'll think, what age is feeling this right now? Which Bethany is showing up here? Am I acting as my teenage self or an earlier self? Then I try to recruit another part of myself to speak compassionately to that side of me. Often, adult Bethany shows up to comfort young Bethany. This reminds me that these feelings arise from former traumas or beliefs that I am now equipped to handle. The point of the acknowledgement phase is to allow space for you to really assess what's going on and hopefully take the first step to see it from a different perspective. Step 2. Explore where these feelings are coming from. Ask yourself, what else is really going on here? Am I extra stressed? Have I had an argument with my partner? Did I have to buy a bigger size in my jeans and that brought up something for me? Are my hormones influencing me strongly? Say a relative made a comment about your body and now you're spiraling. You stepped away and acknowledged the feeling you're having. Now you're exploring what is going on that is causing them. The obvious, Aunt Sue commented on your weight. And the less obvious, it's the holiday season and you're not grounded in your normal routine. There will likely be many factors you uncover in the explore phase. For example, holidays bring up feelings of loneliness. Work has been extra challenging. I'm staying in a home that isn't mine. I am experiencing a lack of control. Feeling out of control is a major factor when it comes to body dysmorphia, eating disorders, disordered eating, and overall body shame. Whatever makes the list during your exploration phase, it is all valid. Some of the reasons that come up for you will just be unavoidable stuff going on in your life. Other times, there are specific things you can eliminate from your life. Standing on a scale, for example. Another trigger for many people is trying on old clothes. If it's available for you, it could be helpful to buy a few new items so you have clothing that fits and that you are already excited about. If you know an item is not going to fit, don't try it on just to see how small it is. That item is a thing of your past, and your present self is your most important self. Step 3. Reconnect with your self-worth through gratitude. A few months ago, I had a bad body image moment. So, as I got into the shower, I started going through the 3 steps. I acknowledged the nasty things I was telling myself, and then I started to explore why I was saying them. My exploration brought up a million reasons, but I pinpointed the main source as feelings of failure and shame surrounding a miscarriage I'd had months prior. After that, it was time to focus on reconnecting with myself and summoning gratitude for all that my body can do. My body had battled infertility, become pregnant, lost the baby, gone through a DNC to remove the pregnancy tissue, bled, contracted, and screamed in pain, and still come out the other side. I'd had my first period post-miscarriage, and I was grateful for my bleed, which signified life. I was grateful for my soft tummy and even my hormones bouncing in every direction. I was grateful for the break we took from trying as my body healed, and I was grateful that my body was healing. I was resilient, a warrior, and a human still living, breathing, and experiencing life. I may not have been at my fittest, my happiest, or my strongest, but I was still me. The reconnecting step will look different for everyone, but turning out focus to all that our body does for us instead of the way it looks can be transformative. In contrast to the body positive mindset where you might write down something you love about your body, the body neutral practice doesn't involve looking at your body from an aesthetic point of view at all. The reconnection phase of body neutrality is centered on what your body can do for you or has done for you. It's action oriented. The body is magical simply because it keeps us alive and breathing and perceiving the world and others around us. We're in relationships. What is Peter Pan syndrome and can it be corrected? Is your significant other or loved one living in the past? Experts weigh in on the I won't grow up situation. Let's talk about Peter Pan syndrome. Now, before your mind dwells on a man-boy in tights for too long, think of an emotionally immature person who has trouble adulting and taking on responsibility, like your ex, let's call him Sean. He may have been fun to flirt with, but after living together, you begin to feel like his mother, reminding him of social responsibilities, and suddenly you're the nagger. Yes, that dirty tactic used to shift blame away from that actual issue, in this case, Sean. The term caught like wildfire after psychologist Dan Kiley titled his book, The Peter Pan Syndrome, in 1983, which became the unofficial but official name of this non-diagnosis. PPS, Peter Pan Syndrome, spans beyond relationships, romantic or otherwise. A boomer filmed on TikTok went viral after knocking the younger generations, saying, "The millennials and Generation Z have Peter Pan Syndrome. They don't ever want to grow up," which fueled the OK Boomer merch craze. So, to better understand how to use this term and what it means, we consulted Sarah Grogan, clinical psychologist at Sage Leaf Counseling. In short, it's when an adult refuses to grow up. In more professional terms, Grogan explains it as a pop psychology term referring to individuals who have difficulty adopting a typical adult lifestyle or struggle to maintain meaningful relationships. PPS can be serious and share traits with mental health issues such as narcissism, depression, and anxiety, to name a few, all of which need care and special attention. Who can get Peter Pan syndrome? Individuals of any sex or gender can develop the behaviors associated with PPS. However, it appears to be more prevalent in cisgender men, says Grogan. She explains that might be because our toxic patriarchal culture places a strong emphasis on gender binaries. Women are defined as the person who nurtures everyone, manages the household and family responsibilities, and carries the brunt of the mental load and emotional labor required to fulfill all these responsibilities, all of which can enable and reinforce bad behavior amongst cisgender men. However, another contributing factor is permissive or overprotective parenting styles. By not teaching children responsibility or shielding them from discomfort, they can begin to show a lack of emotional maturity as they age, resulting in forever childish behavior. How can Peter Pan syndrome affect relationships? At first, a partner will be playful, fun, and everything you requested on your Tinder profile. You may feel like you struck the lottery and can't wait for them to meet the parents. Only, once you've landed a rhythm, it begins to crumble. You feel like a parent reminding your lost child to do their chores, or always feel like you're seeking emotional engagement instead of watching them play Grand Theft Auto with their buddy again. Resentment will begin to set in, and this vicious cycle turns round and round until the heart of the issue has been addressed. Is this syndrome treatable? Yes, but only if a person is willing to step outside their discomfort and fear of responsibility. First, let's take a step back and think about the motivation behind the need for a person to change. We can't force others to get help, but we can set boundaries. It is not making requests or demands of others, Grogan explains. Setting boundaries means personal evaluating and then expressing what we will or won't participate in. It's helpful to bring in outside perspectives, such as a therapist, if participants are willing. Other times, it's beyond your control, and you may need to remove yourself from a toxic environment. Either separate yourself from the Peter Pans in your life or seek a Peter willing to grow alongside you. In culture and news, Why are my friends marrying so young? A befuddled Genzer ponders why fellow 20-somethings are rushing to the altar. This April, Millie Bobby Brown, the no-longer-child star of the Netflix hit Stranger Things, celebrated her engagement to 21-year-old actor, model, and progeny of a rock star, Jake Bon Jovi. When Brown first showed off her ring on Instagram, the internet dissolved into something of an existential crisis. The phrase, "she's 19," started trending on Twitter as users panicked over her decision to marry before she could legally toast a glass of champagne and compared their own life progression to that of the millionaire starlet, never a wise game to play, if you ask me. As a fellow, albeit somewhat more geriatric, member of Gen Z, I'm 26, I have to say that I wasn't quite so shocked by Brown's decision. Off the top of my head, I can count 14 couples in my social circle who have decided to head for the aisle, all within the past 3 years. According to research from The Knot, Americans did marry an average of 3 years younger in 2022 compared to 2021, but this puts the average bride at 30 and groom at 32. Most of the couples I know who got engaged in the past few years were fresh out of college, and all live in major cities, where people tend to wait longer to put a ring on it. It seems like something distinct has happened to my peer group in the past few years, something, dare say, unprecedented. I was 22 when the pandemic hit. I was 24 when I received my first vaccine. I'd expected to spend those years establishing myself as an independent adult. Instead, I had spent them eating Cheerios in my childhood bed. I was suddenly, inexplicably, a college graduate in my mid-20s. I wanted, and still want, some hard evidence that those years had not been lost, and that I had progressed along with them, and what's harder than a diamond? Scrolling through my increasingly bedazzled Instagram, I got the sneaking suspicion that some of these blushing brides might share my anxieties. For young people who felt their futures had been wrenched off the rails by the pandemic, a wedding might feel like proof that they had successfully muscled their lives back onto a recognizable and linear path. When I asked Lisa A. Owusu, and that's O-W-U-S-U, a New York-based jeweler who specializes in wedding and engagement rings, whether she thought the pandemic might have shifted young people's priorities around marriage, her response was unequivocally, "Absolutely." She has returned to her studio, Charlton and Lola, after lockdown, expecting requests for memorial pieces, maybe jewelry embedded with locks of human hair, as was fashionable in Georgian times. There was a lot of darkness around that time, she recalls. Instead, she was inundated with orders for engagement rings, and the following year, wedding bands. "I would have thought people would be scared of moving forward," she says. But rather than grieving the past, her customers seemed to be investing in their futures. It left her amazed at the human capacity for hope. Since June 2020, when the Diamond District reopened, she estimates that her business has been up 25%. David Allen, another New York-based jeweler, shared an Owusu's pandemic spike in engagement requests, but not in her shock. Allen opened his studio in 2000, nearly 15 years before Owusu entered the industry, and he has seen similar booms twice before. Once in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks, and again during the 2008 financial crash. "When it hits the fan and everything in the world is uncertain," he explains, "people really wake up and realize what's important to them." While Allen and Owusu have been a spike in engagements across all age groups, wedding planner Jacqueline Elise says that her clientele base has leaned notably younger in recent years. Elise, who splits her time between New Jersey and California, founded The Wedding Plan and Company in 2011. Today, she works with over 200 couples each year across the country, as well as a few international clients. Up until the pandemic, most of them were between ages 28 and 35. It had seemed to her that clients generally wanted to be sure they had locked down their career and education before getting hitched, but post-COVID, it was very much the opposite, she says. Elise has some theories about this shift. One is this: college kids didn't get to go out and meet people at bars and frat parties. Instead, they had the time and government-mandated space to build deeper emotional connections with their partners. Some may have financial anxiety and feel pressures to combine incomes. And then, of course, there's good old-fashioned existential dread. Our industry rarely hurts during times of crisis or economic downturn, she says. She figures that young people who saw this future dramatically destabilized by the pandemic may have simply looked at one another and said, hey, life is crazy. Let's not do this thing alone. In her book, Love, Inc., sociologist Lori Essig, and that's Essig, argues that the worse things get, the more we turn to romance to feel hopeful about the future. Take, for example, the diamond engagement ring, which wasn't a thing until shortly after World War II. At a time when almost nothing about the future felt secure, the De Beers Diamond Company promised that a diamond is forever, and the American public ate it up. The campaign, says Essig, is now considered the best advertising slogan of the 20th century. Essig thinks something similar might be driving the changing marriage trends these wedding professionals are observing. I think we're scared, and I think scared makes sense, she says. But most of the young spouses and spouses-to-be I spoke to gave different explanations. One 25-year-old I connected with on the Reddit thread rzillennials said that he and his girlfriend of 3 years, also 25, were considering marriage for strictly fiscal reasons as they neared the cutoff to remain on their parents' insurance policies. Emilia Stepanek, who got married last month at 23, didn't see marriage as an anchor in a world that felt unmoored, just the opposite. The instability of the pandemic was actually liberating for her and her husband. It gave them carte blanche. We decided to heck with what anybody else says, she tells me. If we want to get married just because we want to get married, then let's get married. If we want to have a wedding because we want everyone to get together, then let's just have a wedding. Let's just do it. And for Tatjana Freund, and that's Tatjana, an editor and close friend who got engaged last November at age 24, seeing her relationship remain totally stable when the rest of the world seemed to crumble gave her the confidence to take the next step. While she doesn't think the pomp and circumstance of a wedding matters in the long run, she's excited to have an excuse to bring people together and celebrate after so many years of social distancing and celebrating over Zoom. I feel like we missed a lot of rites of passage, she tells me. I want to mark this one. When I first started seeing my peers leave lockdown and enter marriage, I was baffled. Hadn't we just spent 2 years in our parents' basements? Didn't we want to be young, have new experiences, take risks, be free? But after speaking to the newly and youngly betrothed, I realized that the impulse isn't so different from the impulse that drove a college classmate of mine to scrap a meticulously outlined 10-year corporate plan to travel the world and work on farms, or that drove me to pursue a graduate degree in creative writing, a dream I once imagined chasing as a retirement passion project, if at all. We've learned that the futures we plan for are not guaranteed. Why wait to go for what we want? Parts of this article were edited due to time. Still in culture and news, this article is Jennifer Lopez celebrates 54th birthday by dancing on a table in New Post. Jennifer Lopez is always going to live life to the fullest, and that's especially the case for her 54th birthday. Despite hitting the new milestone on July 24th, the singer dedicated the whole month of July to celebrating. And that includes dancing on tabletops and posing in bikinis, as evidenced by her last Instagram. Birthday mood, all month. Always a good day when Lola comes to play. Hashtag on the JLo. Birthday edition coming soon, she wrote, teasing more party details to come in her newsletter on the JLo. In the carousel's cover photo, Lopez danced atop a beautifully decorated table, wearing a metallic gown surrounded by energetic fellow partiers. In other snaps, she posed in the backless dress with a drink in hand and then had a wardrobe change, rocking a black string bikini and fedora. Fans loved all the looks, and more importantly, Lopez's unapologetic commitment to celebrating herself. She radiates, one person commented. You are such a queen, another added. Happiest birthday. Keep thriving, someone else wrote. In another post, the mother star prepped for the party, wearing a silky robe and white bra top. Getting ready to celebrate, she wrote. Lopez is known for her timeless looks and energy, so much so that she developed a skincare line, JLo Beauty, to deliver it to the masses. And although her olive oil and peptide-infused products surely help, it's her mindset and drive that keep her fresh. In a 2018 interview with Emmy magazine, she recalled her ex-fiancé, Alex Rodriguez, telling her that she physically runs like a 25-year-old after she jogged to hand him something. "I haven't stopped that pace, so I'm still at that pace, I guess," she said, per billboard. "When things start aching more, it'll be different." She added that despite the way it seems, she's not immune to aging. "At some point, I'm going to age," she said. "They'll say she looks old, but right now I'm holding it together." "How, you ask?" "I just take it day by day because it's so much stuff," she admitted, "and I try not to worry about too much. And, of course, a balanced diet, exercise, and good skin care help. You can join in on her birthday celebrations by shopping her favorites for a signature J-Lo Glow Blow. Happy birthday, queen." She has a J-Lo Beauty, that J-Lo Glow Serum. It's on Amazon for $63. A J-Lo Beauty, that big screen, for $55 at Amazon. And a J-Lo Beauty, that Fresh Take Eye Cream. It's $48 at Amazon. And lastly, the J-Lo Beauty, that Star Filter. It's $39 at Amazon. In Work and Money, we have 23 ways to spring clean your life. You're probably already planning to give your home a spring scrub down, but why not take the opportunity to think about sprucing up other areas of your life too? Here are 23 ways to spring clean your closet, your beauty routine, your diet, and more. Feng shui your home. Switch up your furniture arrangement by keeping in mind how energy flows through your home. Pay attention to the details in your life and the environment around you, which is directly connected to your internal space. Interior architect and feng shui designer Angie Chow advises. New to the art of feng shui? A beginner's guide like this one can help break it down for you. Donate or consign forgotten fashion. While you're packing up winter wardrobe and evaluating what you have for warmer weather, use this opportunity to clear out anything you don't wear anymore. Haven't worn it in a year? It's time to donate or sell it. Whatever you do, don't toss apparel. Old clothing often ends up in landfills. If you're really looking to downsize, services like Rent the Runway make it easier than ever to consolidate your wardrobe. Try meditating. Using the energizing spring season as an opportunity to reconnect and ground yourself through meditation, create extra time in the morning before getting out of bed to do a simple 5-minute meditation or breathing exercise, suggests Tal Rabinowitz, founder of DEN Meditation in Los Angeles. Meditation has been shown to fight aging, increase mindfulness, decrease anxiety, and improve concentration. Dispose of old beauty products. It's the time to toss all the stuff collecting dust on your vanity, and maybe even some stuff you're trying to use every last drop of. Beauty products used beyond their expiration date can cause ill reactions like infections. Organizing expert Jeffrey Phillips says, "Not all product notes on expiration date, but many will indicate how many months the product will last after opening. To stay on top of their expiration date, use a thin-tipped permanent marker to write on the date you opened it," Phillips suggests. Get your broken stuff fixed. Spring is the perfect time to focus on restoring and repairing, so stop putting off that trip to the hardware store. It's important to repair or let go of broken items, says Cho. Stress is created when we actively or unconsciously ignore tasks. Also, the energetics of a broken item into your home may also manifest or point to a broken something in your life. Throw away old receipts. Everyone's a little bit guilty of receipt hoarding. In order to break your habit, follow a rule set forth by professional organizer Matt Bayer. The best rule to discard excess receipts is to organize them into folders, taxes, returns, capital expenses, or possessions value for insurance. If they don't follow into these categories, then recycle away. Let go of toxic relationships. If you have friends that only amplify your anxiety, it may be time to distance yourself. That's easier said than done, and by no means has to happen overnight. But life is too short to be surrounded by people you don't love and respect, and who may or may not love and respect you. Unplug. When the sun is shining, birds are chirping, and flowers are blooming, you've got no excuse not to head outside and show Mother Nature the attention she deserves. Commit to spending a day hiking or picnicking with your phone off. But simply being more conscious of your tech time is also a step in the right direction. Clean your car. If food wrappers, water bottles, pet fur, and other junk has begun to accumulate in your car, it's time to clear it out. Take time to streamline your tech, too. Messy cords are just as ugly in your car as they are in your office, and can even pose a hazard while driving, says Philip. Neaten up that tangled mess by using a sturdy car phone mount to keep your phone positioned in one safe spot. Next, use command cord clips to neatly secure the wire between your phone and charger. Revamp your fitness routine. Not only does sticking to one kind of exercise get boring, which can lead to a loss of motivation, but you end up working the same muscle groups and risking plateau. Try something new this spring. Cycling, running, Pilates, whatever it is to keep your mind and body entertained and in shape. Develop a green thumb. You don't have to be a botanist to know that plants attract and generate good energy, physically and mentally. They're known to lower stress levels, improve air quality, and stimulate productivity while grounding you to the earth. Declutter your kitchen. The kitchen is a transient space, and thus one of the hardest rooms to keep neat and tidy. You can quickly bring order to the kitchen by focusing on the drawers and adding dividers, says Philip. By simply grouping similar items together and organizing them with dividers, you will vastly improve the functionality and efficiency of your kitchen. Clean your windows. In Feng Shui, the windows in your home symbolize your eyes and how you see your life and the world around you, Joe explains. You begin to see the beauty and joy of everyday life through crystal clear precision. On a practical level, clean windows also allow the most sunshine for a bright and cheerful home. Get more Z's. The days are getting longer, but that's not an excuse to stay up past your bedtime. Take control of your sleep cycle once and for all by making it your mission to get in bed and wake up at the same time every day. Be sure to banish tech from the bedroom, too. The blue light from the screens can disrupt sleep patterns, affecting both the quantity and the quality of the sleep you get. Clean out your fridge. Even if you do your best to stay on top of expired produce and dairy, there are probably staples you've forgotten about still hanging around, like that bottle of mustard from 2015. To keep things as neat as possible moving forward, Philip suggests dividing your fridge into zones where you store similar kinds of food. Make time for breakfast. Celebrity nutritionist Kelly LeVeque, and that's L-E-V-E-Q-U-E, says spring is the perfect time to mix up your breakfast routine. Her smoothie formula, which incorporates 20 grams of protein, 10 grams of fiber, 1 tablespoon of fat, a handful of greens, and 1 quarter cup fruit, naturally helps to elongate and balance your blood sugar curve, LeVeque says. This combination keeps you from crashing before lunch and sabotaging your healthy eating efforts. Unsubscribe to excessive newsletters. Your inbox doesn't have to as overwhelmingly as it seems. Nix any daily, weekly, or monthly newsletters that you haven't opened in the past 6 months. They simply bombard you and cause distractions from emails that are actually important. Take a vacation. Active travel isn't just for the memories, and Instagram's is for your health too. Travel has been proven to lower stress levels, which can in turn reduce your risk for diabetes, metabolic syndrome, high blood pressure, multiple cancers, depression, and more. Cancel recurring charges. Spring is a great time to scrutinize your bank statements for recurring charges that no longer serve you. Whether you're paying for storage for stuff you haven't used in years or a streaming service you open once every couple of months, it's time to cancel and give your bank account a much-needed break. Adopt a self-care routine. Embrace the things that relax your mind and body. Mona Dan, acupuncturist, herbalist, and founder of VIE Healing, recommends weekly Epsom salt baths to take in to that next level. Spend bath time focusing on everything you're thankful for, says Dan. If negativity comes up, note it to yourself and adjust the reason why you depart from the tub. Put a label on it. They may seem trivial, but labels have a bigger impact than you think. Whether it's your fridge, closet, storage room, or bathroom cabinet, put a label on it, Philip said. They help clearly define your grouping so that you can be held accountable. Check under your bed. The under-the-bed area is a real estate gold mine when it comes to storage and organization, says Philip. However, it's also a place where the dust bunnies love to live. He suggests cleaning under the bed at least once a quarter to prevent dust buildup, which can cause allergies and product damage. This article was edited due to time. In relationships, perfect parenting is the enemy of good parenting. We're going to screw up, but it's how we repair our missteps that really matters. The next time you have a parenting dilemma, I invite you to write a letter about it to the wisest old grandmother type you can imagine. and to your best devil-may-care friend from high school you used to sneak out with to ding-dong ditch your algebra teacher's house. How would you frame your parenting problem to each of these people? More important, what would each of these advise you? Write down their answers. Your old friend's reactions might feel satisfying in the moment, but may not necessarily consider the long game. Your wise grandma has probably found more boring ways to blow off steam so she can take a broader view. Now consider that you are both of these voices. Your work as a parent is to use the moments between the challenges child rearing brings up and your responses to decide which voice you want to grow into. This work is easier, but deeper, than most new parents realize. As we make the transition to parenthood and start thinking about child rearing as a verb, so much of the expectation is that we're going to find some recipe that will result in the creation of good little humans. We each have our own idea of what makes for a good human, and we each have unique and beautiful dreams for our children. But as a developmental psychologist engaged in guiding parents over the past 20 years, I've learned that the person we're working on as a parent is actually us. And here's some good news. Turning the lens on ourselves and our own very human growth is also the work that sets up our kids for resilience. In parenting, it's natural to want to get everything right. We love our kids and feel like the stakes couldn't be higher. To add the pressure, we're living in an unprecedented world of curated social media posts that can make it look like everyone else has found that perfect recipe. But decades of scientific research have made it clear that we really don't have to get all the answers to our parenting questions right. In fact, the science shows that a caregiver's imperfections and human mistakes are a huge part of what helps children learn to manage their own anxieties and learn to see life as a process of ups and downs that lead to growth. Perfect parenting literally is the enemy of good parenting. The best parents aren't the ones who get everything right, but rather the ones who get things right more often than not. And there actually is a recipe for that. You've heard of the three R's of education, reading, writing, and arithmetic, but I've distilled the principles of good parenting down to five R's: relationships, reflection, regulation, rules, and repair. As parents engage these five R's, it becomes more and more clear that we're the ones we're raising. Let's walk through these five principles. Relationships. Relationships build attachment and predict resilience. It's easy to say that so-and-so is a bad mother or so-and-so is a good father, but the truth is that attachment and parenting are relationships, and all relationships are dynamic. If you watch any parent over time, they're likely to be both good and bad, in their own unique ways, on their own unique kinds of days. We get to work on our relationships with our kids every day, and in doing so, we're working on ourselves. Reflection. Reflection is by nature contemplative, so I'm going to ask you to stay with me here. As parents, particularly if our kids are still young, most of us don't feel like we have time for much contemplative meditation, but if we let go of the image of the lone meditating monk with nothing to do all day but look at his cave wall, we can make room for mindfulness and micro-meditation in the spaces between even the stressful moments of our daily lives. If you have time to breathe, you have time to breathe intentionally, and that intentional breath resets your nervous system. In that space between the moments, you can pause to think about your own experiences and how those may impact our perspective. There's nothing like parenting to bring up issues from our own childhoods, and in these moments of reflection, we can find opportunities to break old cycles we may not want to repeat. Regulation. Regulation means we're able to stay intentional, not letting our emotions and our behavior react into fight or flight mode unnecessarily. With children, we get multiple opportunities every day to keep calm or to shift into other appropriate emotional responses and to co-regulate with them. This act of co-regulation certainly helps our kids learn self-regulation, but it does at least as much to tone and strengthen our own regulation muscles. Whether or not our kids ever learn not to throw a fit in the bookstore, we ourselves can use the daily practice of parenting to, breath by breath, move away from our bad influence friend self and into our wise grandma self. And remember, we all lose our cool sometimes. What we're aiming for is intentional regulation more often than not. Rules. Rules encompass both limits and boundaries, and kids need both in order to feel safe. As parents, it's our job to establish these rules and then to hold them in an authoritative way. Even the most balanced parents, when left on autopilot, can naturally lean toward either a permissive parenting style, in which we're afraid to tell our kids what's acceptable, or an authoritarian parenting style, in which we end up using our rules like tyrants. If you hear yourself saying, "Well, my kids won't let me enforce the rules, so oh well, that ship has sailed," you might tend toward the permissive. If you hear yourself yelling, "Because I said so," more often than you take a breath to think about the rule in its unique context, you might tend toward the authoritarian. Whichever your natural tendency is, it's never too late to start moving into the middle. Relationship-based, reflective, regulated parenting leads us to find that authoritative space between being permissive and being authoritarian more often than not. Repair. Repair refers to both the spontaneous and intentional process humans use to mend our relationships. This isn't just about fixing mistakes that never should have happened. Repair is actually the space in which we grow. So misattunement is a necessary part of healthy development. If we ignore our baby for a few minutes while we answer texts, they might get anxious, causing a mini rupture in our relationship. But when we recenter them, the repair begins without our having to do anything else. A more conscious effort might be something as simple as saying, "Oops, I thought you wanted help reaching the spoon, but you wanted to do it yourself." With a teen, a repair might be something like watching a favorite TV show together after a tough day and sharing a laugh. As our children grow up, we have many opportunities for repair. Some of those moments will feel simple, and some will take more introspection, forgiveness, and work. Relationships can withstand all kinds of ruptures and mistakes, and science shows that the healthiest relationships can actually grow stronger after discord. This is because the breaking and restoring of confidence in our connection is a huge part of the way humans learn to trust in the safety of the world. Read over the responses you wrote down from your wisecracking friend and your wise grandma. Consider your relationship with your child and reflect on what each of these advisors had to say. This article was edited due to time. We have run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Carrie Lawson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And so long until next time.